They rushed across the dreaming world, Cloudsinger and Broken Ghost, like fireflies dancing across the sky. Cloudsinger's arms were spread as she swooped on the breezes, her song, that beautiful, incredible note, powering toward the empty horizon. Below her, Broken Ghost moved with long-legged strides, a hop, skip, and jump across the ocean's surface. The waters beneath her were speckled with red where the sun painted its reflection upon the waves, and Cloudsinger turned to gaze off at the far distance. Out there, off to the east, the oily black wall was oozing forward, consuming everything in its path. The death cry, the end of the dreaming world. The American continent loomed ahead of them, and Broken Ghost's toes touched the ground, kicking up sparks as she moved with incredible speed. Cloudsinger swooped low, her black shadow growing larger as she neared the ground. There were settlements here, fishing villages and little trading posts that served the farming communities dotted infrequently across the massive continent. Shining, mighty towers sparkled on the horizon where the former baronies of America stood, pumping thought energy into the dreaming world. Beneath Cloudsinger, the assassin seemed almost to not be moving at all. There was no effort to what she did, just as there had been no effort when she had slain the kangaroos. The world seemed to move for her, as though she had set the globe spinning, while she remained in place, its surface kissing her bare feet. By contrast, Cloudsinger felt the pressure in her lungs as her single-note song pulled from her all that she had to give. She wanted to land now, to recoup. The trip to Montana would be what Badfather had called a two-dream, meaning that he would expect and plan for a stop-off in real world before reaching their final destination. The last time that she had traveled here with Broken Ghost, the assassin had held her hand, had pulled her along in her wake as she powered effortlessly across ocean and land. But Cloudsinger was determined to keep up, to prove her worth as they entered this, the final battle. Broken Ghost looked up, her lips pulled back in a terrifying smile amid her skull-like face. They were nearly there, less than a minute now. Cloudsinger looked ahead, forcing her eyes to lose focus, to see the middle distance and the constructions beneath the world, the pulse that hid from normal eyes. There were objects here and there that glowed, sparkled, and spun. Cloudsinger looked for the door under the mountains, the truly hidden entrance to the Cerberus tribe's home, the Mattrans gateway. She saw it then, ahead and off to the west. The gateway beneath the rocks was there, a rectangle hidden from normal sight, pulsing with an incandescent glow. Not orange now, but a shade of gold mixed with green, the color of the flesh of the lime. It was as Decimal River had promised. The door was open. Bridget Baptiste had been successful. Lakish turned, feeling relief as he saw the familiar figure of Kane striding into the room.
Kane, you need to get out of here. We're evacuating right now.
We're not going anywhere. We're all going to wait right here.
What do you mean?
Bridget turned from her computer terminal, tossing her gas mask rebreather aside, to reveal a devilish smile on her lips.
We've prepared a little surprise for you, oh mighty leader.
What are you talking about? I don't follow.
You will.
Kane reached forward and plucked the rebreather off Lakish's face.
Old man.
Without the gas mask filtering his breathing, Lakish could smell immediately the new scent that was filling the air, subtle and familiar. He turned away from Kane, peering over Bridget's shoulder across to the antechamber beyond the operations center. The armor glass walls of the jump chamber were misting up.
Someone is using the Mattrans.
You bet they are.
Bridget stood up, stepping close to Lakish.
It's always nice meeting new people, don't you find?
Lakish watched as the chamber door opened and two silhouettes stepped from the swirling mists of the Mattrans unit. They were two women, their skin lustrous, their black hair coarse. The shorter one was dressed in strips of material of the deepest red, and Lakish saw that her bare brown flesh was covered in tattoos of the most intricate designs, circuitry and diagrams. The other's skin was far paler, almost translucent, and it was unmarked. She wore a white strap across her chest, and dangling white skirts flowed below her waist, leaving her legs free to move. Glass glinted in her braided hair, catching the red emergency lights of the operations room, and something was spinning at the end of the cord she held in her hand. But it was her face that Lakish dwelled upon. The rest he took in with a single glance, but her face was something mesmerizing, a terrifying visage from a nightmare. Even in the deep red glow of the room, Lakish could see that the woman's face was colored white, with dark patches around the eyes. Her face was a skull. Donald Bry had removed the cover to the security keypad, and he stood beside it, fiddling with the pen in his hand that he had been using to keep a record of the evacuees. He plucked the metal pocket clip off the pen. Leaning one arm against the wall as he stared at the keypad wiring, Bry used the pointed end of the broken pocket clip to enter a sequence into what remained of the keypad itself. Slowly, the machinery went into action, and the huge door shuddered open.
Good job, Poindexter.
Edward stepped forward and began ushering people through the widening gap.
On the double, people! Let's do this quick and orderly!
And Bry watched the crowd file past him one by one. At the back of the shuffling crowd, Domi stood on tiptoe and examined the faces of the people around her. She could see Donald Bry up at the front of the crowd, helping Edwards to direct the Cerberus personnel. With the number of people in the corridor right now, it would take several minutes to push her way through and reach Bry. She checked the faces around her, hoping to find Skylar Hitch. She couldn't see the woman anywhere nearby, and the fact that Skylar was only 5 feet tall meant that she could easily miss her in this crowd. She turned back, gazing down the corridor toward the entry door to the ops room, wondering what to do. She lost her train of thought when Shizuka came sprinting into the main corridor, clothes and skin covered in filth, holding the gleaming blade of her katana.
Shizuka?
Domi dashed along the corridor to meet the warrior woman.
Shizuka, is that you?
Domi, what's going on?
Domi touched the rebreather that covered the lower half of her face.
We've detected a contaminant in the air. Cerberus is being evacuated. You have to leave.
Where's Lakish? Where are Grant, Kane, and Brigid?
It's okay. I think Grant's already evacuated. I haven't seen him. The others are in the control center together. Lakish and Brigid are having trouble sending the order through the Cerberus mainframe to purge the air conditioning, and Kane just went to get some gas masks for everyone.
No, come on!
Shizuka dashed down the corridor at full sprint.
Lakish is in trouble!
Domi ran after the bedraggled samurai warrior, not bothering to question the statement. When Brigid Baptiste entered Grant's room in the Cobaltville Medical Hub, she found Kane was already waiting, sitting in one of the comfortable chairs beside Grant's bed. She was soaked, her hair dripping from the rainstorm that was darkening the skies outside.
You decided to join us after all, Baptiste?
Couldn't let you storm heaven without me.
Where's Abby?
I left her with one of the neighbors.
Will she be all right?
Does it matter?
Are we all here for the same thing? To leave this prison or dream or whatever the fuck it is?
I don't really want to leave. But I can't stay here knowing what I know. Knowing that it's all a lie.
No matter how beautiful, a lie is still just a lie.
The woman with the skull-painted face stepped closer.
Dr. Singh?
Lakish nodded, feeling fear rise within him.
I understand that Lakish is the name you prefer.
Lakish wondered if he should run. As the thought crossed his mind, Kane stepped behind him, blocking the route to the exit door, while Brigid remained at his side.
I am Broken Ghost, and I am here to bring justice.
The other one, the one in dark red rags, was holding back a little, standing close to the doorway to the Matrans unit. Broken Ghost stopped before Lakish, her dark eyes boring into his own.
Do you believe in justice, Dr. Singh?
Yes, I do. Fundamentally.
Your people are trapped, dead, dying. And this facility will shut down shortly, never to reopen. That is simply the way in which I do things. No loose ends. I'm here for you, Lakish. I've come here to kill you.
I see. But I don't understand. Why me? Why have you targeted my people?
Bastard! Don't you know who we are? Don't you know who I am?
Cloudsinger, please.
Broken Ghost reached forward, stroking pale fingers down Lakish's cheek as she looked into his eyes.
Months ago, you sent your people to Russia to execute my tribal brothers. In so doing, you've destroyed the Dreamin'. You understand now why you must be punished? Why we're here to kill you?
The death cry, Lakish realized. She was talking about the failed operation to retrieve the death cry. That Russian superweapon that promised to put an end to the threat of the Anunnaki. The weapon had turned out to be unstable, and, to further complicate matters, a second group had arrived in an effort to snatch the weapon. These women, Broken Ghost and the one she called Cloudsinger, had to be a part of that other group.
What have you done to my people?
You need not worry yourself with such trivialities.
Broken Ghost placed her other hand on the other side of Lakish's head, pressing against him.
Hold still!
The woman looked at him from the skull-like makeup of her face, pushing her hands against his skin as she took a grip on his head. She planned to twist his neck, break it, snapping the spinal column in a single deadly movement, Lakish realized. It would be swift and painful, and then he would be dying in agony until the life finally ebbed out of his body.
Please, stop this. Don't do this. You have misunderstood the situation.
Suddenly, Domi's arm flashed into the room, throwing one of her knives. Broken Ghost stumbled backward with a blade stuck in her shoulder.
Get the hell away from him!
Beside the albino girl, Shizuka had rushed into the room, swinging her katana, braced for a fight.
Lakesh! They can't be trusted! Bridget and Kane aren't working for Sobros anymore!
So I gathered.
Lakesh stepped backward, retreating to stand with Domi and Shizuka as their enemies spread out.
What's happened to them, do you know?
Then he saw the state of Shizuka's silk dressing gown, the stains of blood, and the gunk that clung to her skin.
Come to that, what happened to you?
Granta talked to me.
Shizuka held the katana high and ready.
Tried to rape me, then kill me with Bridget's help.
We'll make sure this time.
Kane turned, and Shizuka, Lakesh, and Domi all saw the Sin Eater pistol in his grip.
Dak!
Domi pulled Lakesh down behind one of the desks as the stream of 9mm slugs zipped all around them.
Get your head down!
Shizuka leaped over a chair and landed beside them.
This is very disconcerting.
That's not Kane! Just get that idea out of your mind! It's not Kane, not Bridget! And it most assuredly wasn't Grant!
What happened, Shizuka?
Grant! He attacked me! It wasn't him! It looked like him, but there was nothing of Grant in that abomination!
These people are here to kill me. The two newcomers are called Broken Ghost and Cloud Singer.
Cloud Singer? I met her before! Crap! These are the bastards who almost blinded me!
I know.
Lakesh followed Domi in a crouch as the three of them moved to the cover of another desk.
That time, they took control of the satellite feed and the biometric data, fed us false information until it was almost too late.
What did you do?
Kane's field team was left defenseless in hostile territory. These people are technological shaman, able to turn our equipment against us seemingly at will. Donald and his team have spent months repairing the damage they caused to our systems and bolstering the security protocols. And yet, they've managed to set a rootkit in the mainframe that's preventing anyone's access but theirs.
Bridget filed a report, didn't she?
Lakesh's eyes lit up as he saw her point.
Of course, dearest. And her bogus report must have unleashed the virus.
I thought you were an honorable man, Dr. Singh. I thought that you believed in justice. Yet now you hide from it.
This isn't justice. This is murder.
We need to fight past them and get the hell out of here.
Wait.
What is it?
You're right. It's not Kane, not Bridget. They were changed when they came through the Mantrans. Skylar noticed, but I ignored her when Donald mentioned it to me. It's incredible. That woman is so in tune with computers that she can recognize a corrupted file in any form. Even human.
So what do we do?
If I can get to the Mantrans controls, I may be able to backtrack and reverse the damage.
Grant, you can save him?
Get me to the controls, and I will do my very best, Shizuka.
Bridget turned away from the window.
How do we get out?
We could run. Grant and I were just talking about taking a Sandcat and driving out of the Ville gates, seeing how far we could go.
Maybe that would just be running away, not getting out. What do we know about the nature of this place?
That it's a huge production, involving perhaps 1,000 actors in their roles.
That our thoughts have been changed, our memories altered, so that we don't know how we got here, so that we wouldn't question what we saw.
Then it's some kind of illusion. Those aren't actors, they're creations.
Robots?
My nurse here is no robot, I can assure you of that.
It's as real as we think it is, which means it works in our heads, plays with our minds to create the illusion. You said yourself, Grant, that it felt like a dream. In a dream, you never question, never wonder what the backstory was. You just accept and move forward, and no matter what happens, you incorporate it as a part of the dream.
So we're trapped in a stream of consciousness. There could be a psychic behind it.
Or a psychotropic drug pumped into us without our knowledge.
Oh, this is impossible. You can't fight what you can't see. And what does Cerberus have to do with any of it?
Cerberus stood at the gateway, guarding the path into the underworld.
Perhaps there was a gateway that we came through to get here. Maybe we're in hell.
Of course. That's it. There was rumored to be a project in the before time that experimented with the transfer of matter from one location to another using quantum gateways, an instantaneous transport system via folding space.
And what? You think we're part of that experiment? You think that's maybe how we came here?
Oh, and it's funny, Kane. You're both going to laugh. but the name of the rumored division involved in this was Project Cerberus.
And you didn't think to mention this before?
Well, it must have been in my mind somewhere, Kane, but I couldn't bring it to the surface. When you mentioned gateways, it must have triggered something. Something that they tried to hide from me when they put us here. Remember when we met in my apartment, the way we fought? Didn't you feel as though your thoughts were being messed around with then? Like you couldn't quite keep hold of them?
Then we need to find this gateway. You have any idea what these things look like, Bridget?
Bridget closed her eyes, trusting that now that she had recalled a piece of relevant information, her eidetic memory would bypass the blocks that had been set in all their minds and locate the information they required.
Lights. Lights and electricity. Lightning crackling within the swirling mist. That's all I can recall. That and a kind of howling noise.
Where do we find all of that?
A dim recollection of a secret chamber in a storeroom on A-level suddenly took shape in Bridget's mind.
Alpha level.
Bullets whizzed over the desktops as Lakesh, Domi, and Shizuka edged across the ops room.
We're sitting ducks here. Here's the plan. I'll kill the lights, then get them to think we got out. While they chase me, Mo, you work the mat trans, okay?
Suddenly, the tip of Kane's gun barrel appeared, poking through the space between desks. Instantly, Shizuka swung her katana and the razor-sharp blade knocked the barrel aside. The blade damaged the gun, and Kane was too busy avoiding the sharp steel to deal with a repair.
Now, Domi!
Domi and Lakesh didn't need to be told twice. The albino girl pounced from her hiding place behind a desk. Her second boot knife clenched firmly in her grip, the blade reversed so that it pointed toward the floor. Bridget Baptiste watched the chalk-skinned figure of Broken Ghost run across the room after Domi, with Cloudsinger just strides behind. At the same time, Shizuka was driving the fake Kane back through the aisles of computer terminals with broad swings of her sword. Domi was at the entrance now, her knife raised. The blade drilled itself into the control panel in the wall. The red emergency lights of the room flared for a moment, the red alert replaced with a dazzling, halogen-bright whiteness. Then, as Kane, Bridget, Broken Ghost, and Cloudsinger blinked away the after-effects of being dazzled, the room went dark.
Come on, you sorry-ass scum! Let's get it on!
Across the room, Kane stumbled, the rods and cones popping in his eyes where the flash of lights had surprised him just moments before. Shizuka drove her katana at Kane's torso as he stood stunned by the lights. Gripping the hilt of her katana, Shizuka began to lift and turn. Shizuka had squinted, knowing precisely what Domi planned to do and preparing herself for the change of lighting. Ambient light from computer screens dotted across the desks still cast a glow in the darkened room. In this light, the broad figure of Kane was reduced to a silhouette with two white spots in his head where the light glinted from his pain-widened eyes. Across the wide room, Shizuka could make out Domi's figure standing in the open doorway, framed in the dull orange emergency lighting of the corridor, as Broken Ghost and Cloudsinger rubbed at their blinded eyes.
Come on, Shizuka, we're getting out of here!
With that, Domi disappeared into the corridor. Broken Ghost blinked, and the night vision lenses swooped over her eyes on their nictitating membranes. The darkness of the ops room was brought into sharp focus once more, and she saw Kane lying against a desk, teeth clenched, hands clutching at his stomach. Then the samurai warrior leaped through the air at her, sword held high and dripping with Kane's blood. Broken Ghost brought up her hands in a blur. Shizuka pulled herself down into a balanced crouch, the sword held before her. Broken Ghost was holding the blade between her clasped hands, and suddenly she swiped her hands off and to the right. And the katana spun out of Shizuka's grip. Broken Ghost stalked toward the samurai, her bold, skull-like white makeup seeming to glow in the darkened room. Cloudsinger had brought her own night vision lenses into play by now, and she scoured the room, trying to see where the others had gone.
Lakesh isn't here. He must have left with the white girl when the lights went out. Quickly, after them!
Bridget's long-legged stride took her to the door in a fraction of a second, and she and Cloudsinger rushed out into the corridor after the departing enemies. From a hiding place in the leg space of one of the desks, Lakesh smiled. The ruse wouldn't last long, but if Domi could keep them busy for a few minutes, he may just be able to retrieve the real Kane, Grant, and Bridget from digital limbo. He crouch-walked across the ops room, past the bloody, fallen figure of Kane, as Shizuka and Broken Ghost circled each other on the far side of the room. In a few seconds, he was back at the Mattrans terminal, punching in his override password and backtracking through the recent arrivals and departures. A series of indicator tags then appeared on the terminal.
Ah,
The files on Kane, Grant, and Bridget were still alive. Their information had not been wiped. It was pure good fortune that the assassin had chosen to enter the redoubt via the Mattrans. Without that decision, it was entirely possible that the program would have been wiped or corrupted, along with the rest of the Cerberus database. The rootkit had hitched itself to so much of the basic programming, and yet a firewall had been built into the viral program itself to prevent it touching the Mattrans system, lest it should interfere with the ultimate arrival of the invaders. Lakesh skipped past the front-end programming screens and accessed the protocols of the Mattrans. His friends were inside here somehow, held in stasis. Whatever had stepped out of the Mattrans just 17 hours earlier was a strange, warped copy, utilizing the data held in the Mattrans computer. Mentally, he ran through the steps necessary to free his friends from limbo. Domi sprinted along the wide main corridor of the redoubt, its overhead metal struts glinting with the flashing red alarm lights, disappearing into shadow before they reappeared once more. The corridor was empty, and at the far end she could see moonlight seeping through the gap where the entrance door had finally been opened. She looked over her shoulder, checking on her pursuers. Two of them had followed her.
Damn!
She had hoped for all four, hoped to distract them long enough so that Lakesh could get to the Mattrans and do whatever it was he had planned. She hoped that Shizuka was maintaining a strong defense for him. As she ran down the wide, arched corridor, something cut through the air behind her. Domi gazed upside down as twin figures rushed toward her. Bridget ran ahead, her lengthy strides eating up the distance between them as the tattooed woman retrieved her boomerang. Unable to move, Domi organized her thoughts as her enemies closed in on her. 10 paces behind Lakesh, Broken Ghost swung her leg high.
Are you a warrior?
Lying beneath her on the floor, Shizuka rolled. Shizuka's hands reached forward as the woman stamped her foot to the floor, grasping for the assassin's ankle in the semi-darkness of the room and yanking as hard as she could. As she fell, Broken Ghost reached out for support, and her arm swept the surface of a desk. Shizuka pounced at the woman, shoving her head against the hard floor. Lakesh continued typing, trying to remember the structured coding that operated the Mattrans protocols. He typed out the final sequence and watched the screen as the characters shifted and the Mattrans unit fired up. They found a wheelchair in which they placed Grant, and Bridget kept pace as Kane pushed his partner through the bland corridors of the Cobaltville Medical Hub.
Where do you want to go?
Bridget stabbed at the elevator button.
We're going to the top of the administrative monolith. I'll recognize the gateway when I see it.
And then what?
Then we're going to flee this dream.
Sitting in the wheelchair, Grant looked over his shoulder and offered his partner a look.
Hey, Kane, you remember when it was just the two of us and plans actually made some kind of fucking sense?
It was never that simple.
Decimal River walked back into the cave, holding a cooked chicken leg, grease coating his fingers. He had worked himself up with stress, been unable to eat for the final days leading to the push against Cerberus. Now that he was finally able to eat once again, the chicken tasted like something magical as it touched his tongue. Satisfied, he sat before his computer screen and gazed at the data feed. The three subjects were still there, but there was something wrong. A new line of code was running rampant through the system, fragmenting his virtual world, destroying the trap. Someone had discovered them. Decimal River wiped his greasy fingers on the legs of his pants, leaned forward, and tried to gain backdoor access to the system.
Access denied? But that can't be.
The elevator doors opened onto Alpha level, and a well-dressed guard rushed over to greet the trio, a stern look on his face.
This level is closed to magistrates.
Kane's wrist tendons flexed.
No time left to argue. Let's go.
This way.
Bridget led Kane and Grant, relying on the vague memory of a gateway that someone called Lakesh had described. Lakesh watched as the information on the monitor flickered, and his fingers darted forward to adjust the code. Someone was trying to break through the Cerberus firewall, the same person who had originally manipulated the data. Lakesh added a further level of encryption to his data stream, blocking his unseen opponent's access. He looked up from the screen, watching with nervous anticipation as the familiar mist began to fill the Matran's chamber, billowing from the vents and fogging up the glass. As he watched, Luckish became aware of a presence behind him, and he turned just in time to duck a powerful punch aimed straight at the back of his head.
Ah!
The cane imposter stood there, a bloody streak across his chest and torso, blood oozing down the clothing he wore. Luckish spun from his chair and leaped out of the way.
Time to die, you irritating little megalomaniac.
On the other side of the room, Broken Ghost was caught in a tangle on the floor with Shizuka lying on top of her. The assassin then tossed her head back until it crashed into Shizuka's forehead. Shizuka felt a wave of nausea flood through her with the impact, and her grip weakened on the assassin's agile body. A moment later, a sharp elbow slammed into Shizuka's belly as Broken Ghost renewed her attack. The skull-faced assassin threw Shizuka's battered body aside. A moment later, she stood over the samurai as Shizuka lay on the floor, utterly exhausted. As Broken Ghost flexed her muscles, Cloud Singer and Bridget Baptiste entered the room, dragging the unconscious form of Domi.
Broken Ghost! Luckish is gone! You promised me we'd...
Cloud Singer spied the ongoing skirmish on the far side of the room via her night lenses. Luckish was backing away as a bloody, wounded cane closed in on him. As Cloud Singer watched, Luckish stepped back into a smaller room and then found himself against a wall of smoked glass, trapped with nowhere left to run.
This is it!
In front of them was the pewter-gray armaglass wall of the secret gateway that Luckish had used to commute between Cobaltville and the Cerberus Redoubt.
How does it work?
Guess we'll find out.
Bridget entered the chamber and looked around, an expression on her face like that of someone who was remembering the solution to a puzzle. She came back out and closed her eyes, visualizing her fingers touching the keypad.
I think I remembered that right. Now, we all have to be in here.
Kane lifted Grant from the wheelchair and into the jump chamber. She opened her eyes and looked at Kane and Grant.
This is it.
Luckish felt his heart pounding in his chest as Kane stood before him, fists clenched, his chest oozing blood over his torn shirt. Behind him, in the half-light cast by the computer screens, Luckish saw three women stalking toward him, the fake Bridget Baptiste, the tattooed teenager Cloud Singer, and the skull-faced athlete Broken Ghost. Luckish peered into the darkness beyond them, trying to locate Domi and Shizuka, hoping that they might yet come to his assistance.
They're dead!
If it's me you want, then just kill me. Please, leave my people alone.
You killed my friends!
No, I didn't.
Liar! You ordered your people there, ordered them to kill my war brothers. They may have done your dirty work, but the blood is on your hands, Luckish of the Cerberus tribe.
The four figures surrounded Luckish. There was nowhere left to go, nowhere left to run. He had done everything he could.
It's over, Luckish. Time to go.
Behind him, the Matrans was powering down. The chamber door swung open on its counterbalanced hinges. Suddenly, the mists swirled out of the opening and three figures emerged. Without pausing, Kane leaped through the open Matran's door at his blood-drenched double, swinging his right fist at the jaw of his surprised opponent. Wrong-footed, the tired, bloody clone of Kane fell to the tiled floor. He lay there, unable to move, as the figure he had been based on surveyed the Cerberus control room. Kane saw the familiar forms of Cloud Singer and Baptiste, as well as the skull-faced assassin who led them both. Broken Ghost made a charge at Luckish. Behind Kane, still at the open doorway of the Matrans, Grant jumped forward, his left arm coming up to block Broken Ghost's attack as she swung a high kick at Lockish's head. Grant then pushed Broken Ghost's leg back. Furious, Cloud Singer looked at Kane and his partners, then back at the double of Bridget Baptiste.
Deal with these animals.
Broken Ghost had taught her to tamp down her anger well, but she wanted to hurt Kane so much in that second that it took all her determination not to launch herself at him. Luckish had to come first, if she could find a way around Grant. The Bridget duplicate clambered over the desk toward Kane in the faded denim jacket. Kane looked up in time to grab for Bridget as she dropped onto him. Together, the pair fell onto a desk.
What kind of foul trick are you?
Could I ask you the same question, Baptiste?
The Brigid Baptiste creature regained her balance in a split second and lunged at Kane before he could get up from the desk. Her hands reached around his throat.
I don't know what you are, but it won't matter for much longer.
Kane's back was on the desk as the false Brigid strangled him, feeling the pressure increase on his throat, his vision blurred. But right now, blurred vision was good. It meant that he didn't have to look at what he was about to do. His right hand swept toward Brigid's ribcage, and he tensed his wrist tendons, calling the Sin Eater to hand. Her body leaped and rocked as the slugs drilled through her, her gripping hands jarring against his neck as she tried to cling to him, cling to life. Then her grip loosened, and she fell away from Kane.
Baptiste is never going to let me live that down.
Just a few paces away, the true Brigid emerged from the Matrans, wearing a suede jacket, a scarred leather satchel over her shoulder. She turned to Lakesh, her brow furrowed in confusion.
Lakesh, what is going on?
Matrans glitch.
As Brigid looked at him, eyes wide in surprise, Lakesh saw the dark form of Cloudsinger rushing from the shadows.
Brigid, watch out!
In a flurry of movement, Cloudsinger vaulted over a desk. A moment later, she was on Brigid's back, a razor-sharp boomerang in her hand. Brigid stumbled as Cloudsinger's weight threw her off balance. The stumble threw off Cloudsinger's aim, and Brigid was able to turn her head away from the sharp edge of steel that raced toward her. A handful of red-gold locks fell to the floor as the tattooed girl brought the boomerang back above her head. As the tattooed girl tried a second time, Brigid let her body go lax, falling backward to the floor like so much dead weight, slamming the girl's head into the unyielding floor. Rolling off the fallen warrior, Brigid turned and angled a solid right cross at Cloudsinger's cheek. Near the open Matran's chamber door, Grant was standing opposite Broken Ghost, sizing her up as she stalked left and right like a cornered jungle cat, head down, watching him. With the night vision implants, the assassin who moved like a ghost could see Grant far better than he could see her, and she was taking her time to settle on her best strategy. Domi was brought back to consciousness by the feeling of something sharp digging into her belly, where Cloudsinger and the fake Brigid had tossed her on the floor like so much worthless trash. A glass shard from one of the damaged computer monitors was digging into her, its sharp edge pressing against her body. She reached beneath her and plucked the shard free, then worked her way across the floor to where Grant was squaring off against Broken Ghost. Still six paces from her, Grant appeared to raise his arm as if to swing a punch. Broken Ghost saw the blaster appear in his hand and went into motion. Grant tracked her, but his bullets were just behind the skull-faced assassin. She bounded into the air. At the apex of her jump, Broken Ghost's bare foot kicked out. Grant's head snapped backward with the blow, and he fell to the floor. When the stars in his vision subsided, he found himself looking up at the pale-skinned assassin. Domi had worked her way across the floor near Broken Ghost, who was readying herself to finish Grant as he struggled on the floor. As the assassin stepped forward, she committed her weight to one leg, and Domi lashed out with the glass shard. Blood gushed from the back of Broken Ghost's ankle, the Achilles tendon sliced in half. Unable to stand, she toppled into the Matrans unit. Blood flowed from her ruined leg as she lay on the floor of the Matrans unit. Domi crawled across the floor, the shank of glass glinting in her hand as it caught the lights of the monitors. She raised the shard above her head, preparing to plunge it into the assassin's breast, but a firm hand grasped her wrist.
No, Domi.
When she turned, she saw Grant there, a firm, no-nonsense look on his face. Domi's grip on the glass loosened, and it dropped from her hand. Across the room, Brigid Baptiste used a cord from one of Skylar's broken computer units to bind Cloudsinger's hands. The young warrior was unconscious now, from equal parts exhaustion and the force of a solid right cross from the feistiest archivist that Lakesh had ever seen.
Put her in the Matrans with the other one, then close the door. Mr. Bry will secure the redoubt, and then we'll decide what to do with them.
Kane looked around the shadow-filled room.
We all okay?
I believe that we are, generally speaking.
Kane stepped toward Lakesh, with Grant and Domi a few paces behind, making their way through the debris-strewed room.
I think that I owe you, all of you, my deepest thanks.
Kane looked at his surroundings almost as though he was seeing them for the first time, and then he extended his hand toward Lakesh, gripping the older man's hand tightly.
I think we all owe you some thanks of our own. For a moment there, it was starting to look like we'd never get out of Koboldville.
Lakesh had no idea what the man was referring to, but he nodded regardless, just relieved to still be alive. Grant noticed a woman's leg sticking out from behind one of the desks, where it had been almost hidden by the shadows. He stepped over the fallen body of the false Kane and made his way over to the figure lying beside the desk, crouching beside it.
Shizuka?
Face spattered with trash and blood, sporting a fat lip and a darkening bruise on her forehead, Shizuka looked at him, eyes flickering as she struggled to regain consciousness.
Grant-san, is that really you?
Who else would it be?
He reached one arm gently behind her head and, rolling her toward him, lifted her from the ground. Grant stood, holding the feather-light form of his lover in his arms. She clung to him tightly, but there was a tension in her that felt strange. He looked at the dried blood on her face and the food and garbage stains that spotted the silk of her familiar dressing gown.
What happened to you?
Shizuka tried to smile, as much as her swollen lip would allow.
I got trashed.
Well, our first order of business should be a visit to Riba Defor in the infirmary. Ladies first.
Cloudsinger opened her eyes and peered around her. She was lying on a bed, the sheets tangled about her legs, sweat shining on her tattooed body. She reached out, fumbling in the darkness until her fingers found the switch. The bedside lamp lit the small bedroom with a warm, orange-hued glow. She lay on a double bed in a box room barely large enough to accommodate it. Rolling, Cloudsinger kicked off the damp sheets and sat up on the bed, trying to get her thoughts in order. She had come from somewhere, traveled here somehow, but she couldn't remember how or why. Rubbing sleep from her eyes, the tattooed warrior stood up, barely taking in the weirdly familiar surroundings. She stepped through the doorway, out into a compact room that contained a sagging, dilapidated couch, a single shelf holding three books, one of them a hidebound tome labeled The Law. A simple kitchenette stood at the side of the Spartan room. Opposite the kitchen, she saw three windows reaching from floor to ceiling, long, characterless brown drapes dangling before them. She made her way across the room toward the windows, groping for the pull that operated the drapes. There was an impressive view from the windows. It was nighttime, a sliver of moon peeking from the thick clouds that ambled across the sky. Beneath the sliver of moon, a forest of lights sparkled and glinted like jewels or stars. It was a human settlement, a ville dominated by a massive tower that strained toward the heavens, a perfectly ordered, self-contained society. Cloudsinger blinked, fear worming its way from deep in her belly. She was trapped. A sudden jolt of pain and Broken Ghost was awake. She struggled to open her eyes, but they wouldn't open. She felt so lethargic, and yet strangely, she was utterly awake. The pain was so intense, so absolute, that it threatened to overwhelm her, consume her. She clenched her fists, holding on to her tenuous grip on wakefulness. All that counted was the pain. She calmed her mind, remembering the techniques that she had been taught by Bad Father years before. A wet worker is never ruffled, never swayed by emotion. Pain assaulted her, high in her right leg, a rending, tearing, ripping pain. She struggled once more to turn her head, to open her eyes, but she couldn't. The pain worsened then, threatening to overwhelm Broken Ghost. And suddenly her eyes were open, assaulted by light so bright that it stung to look. She saw them as shadows, first of all, shadows moving back and forth until they took proper form. She was lying on her back before them, these shadow people, dressed in their starched clothing, masks over their shadow mouths. Suddenly, one of the doctors leaped back from a fountain of blood. Her leg, she realized, they were cutting through her leg. As the thought spun through her mind, Broken Ghost sank back against the gurney, feeling the darkness of sleep take hold once more. Once they had purged the air vents, a service was held outside the Cerberus Redoubt to honor the recently departed. The body of Michaels was recovered from the machine room and buried, while Lakesh led his people in tribute to Trent, whose body had been destroyed in the recycling processor. Skylar Hitch remained on the list of those missing in action, although the general consensus was that she was probably another victim of the savage assault on the redoubt. The fate of the two invaders was a mystery, as the jump chamber was empty when they returned to the op center. That afternoon, three more bodies were recovered and buried beside those who had died bravely defending Cerberus Redoubt. These three graves, however, were unmarked. It was an onerous task, but Kane, Grant, and Bridget felt it was somehow their responsibility. The corpses wore their faces, serene in death despite all that they had been through in those final hours. Kane leaned on his shovel beside the three freshly dug plots.
It's a lot like losing a brother, isn't it?
Or a sister. One you never knew you had.
You okay, Baptiste?
Bridget stood for a moment, gazing at the blanket-wrapped body that shared her form as sunlight played in the trees around them.
I'll be fine.
Everything's getting back to normal. We should, too.
If this even is normal. What's to say we didn't walk out of one trick and into another?
You don't want to start thinking like that. That's the road to madness, Kane. Let it go. Be damn thankful we all have two arms and two legs, partner.
Before long, all that happened would just be a bad old memory.
As they replaced the topsoil over the mountain graves, Kane felt something tug at his senses. He glanced up and saw Shizuka standing at the edge of the clearing, watching the three of them work. He nudged Grant and pointed out Shizuka.
Grant, we'll finish up here.
Thanks, Kane.
Grant rested his shovel against the trunk of a nearby tree. Brushing dirt from his clothes, Grant made his way over to where Shizuka waited.
Hey.
Hey, yourself.
She was dressed once more in casual clothes, light cotton trousers and a blouse of warm peach.
You all done?
Yeah. Look, Shizuka, I'm really sorry for what happened, for what I did. I mean, it wasn't me, but to you, for a while, it was, and I understand if maybe you feel uncomfortable with that, with me, just now. It's okay, really, it is.
That monster attacked me, grandson. Tried to rape me. It was horrible, and it had your face.
I know. It must be hard to look at me.
Grant, that thing wasn't you. My eyes were deceived for a while, but never here. Never my heart.
You sure?
I love you, Grant.
Shizuka stepped forward, reaching her arms around him. A moment later, Grant had his arms around her, holding her close, as if he would never let her go.
Grant, I have been contacted by Nuedo. I'm expected back there by tonight.
Still holding Shizuka tightly, Grant pressed his lips to her forehead.
Can we take the rest of the day to make the most of our time together?
I'm all yours. For the rest of the day, and always.
Arm in arm, Grant and Shizuka made their way to the redoubt's entrance. Kane and Bridget watched the couple walk off.
What do you think they're talking about?
Things that happen to other people, living other lives.
Those things don't matter. Not anymore.
At the end of the long day, Bridget found herself alone in her quarters, readying herself for sleep. She stood there, staring into the bathroom mirror as water splashed from the faucet. Her eyes were so green in the sharp lights, so bright that they almost glowed. She turned off the faucet and looked at her reflection a moment longer, focusing on her emerald eyes. Her eyes were just like the girl's. Bridget walked across the room on bare feet. She climbed into her bed and leaned across for the book that waited on her bedside table before thinking better of it. She was tired, and her body ached with the need for rest. But her mind raced over events she wouldn't be able to forget.
Things that happen to other people, living other lives.
Those things don't matter. Not anymore.
Lying in bed, staring up at the ceiling, Bridget remembered Abigail. Outlander's Janus Trap is a Graphic Audio production. Outlanders and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2009, Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Hazelford, Thomas Penny, Nanette Savard, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Ren Casey, David Coyne, Elizabeth Demery, Laura Reichert, Elizabeth Jernigan, Barbara Pinellini, Casey Platt, Ken Jackson, Margie Tompros, Tim Carlin, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Hazelford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld. Adapted for graphic audio by Joshua Cristiano. The Outlanders theme was composed by Norman Vandersleis. If you enjoyed Outlanders, be sure to look for James Axler's Deathlands, available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio. Cadet Vada?
Sir!
You are a disgrace to the service.
Sir?
Many, many people want your head on a pike. I'm going to see your resignation on my desk by 1500 hours this afternoon.
I, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign from the Academy for personal reasons.
Now we have to figure out what to do with
you. Dad, listen!
We're sending you out to the Rift with a ship going to salvage. You're taking the Glennis Jones to Lastway.
You're making me captain?
Courage, Kai. You've got what you need to start a good life. Go.
What if I can make enough in trade to buy Glennis? And fix her up and own my own ship?
I need to talk to you.
What's up?
We have a contract to deliver a cargo of agricultural machinery to Belinta. What?
Kai. We wondered how long it'd take.
Trade and profit, right? Well, let's take a look at this contract you signed. We have to buy the goods up front?
Of course. I thought Sabine Prime. Sabine has several manufacturers of the kind of equipment they want.
But it's worth trying.
Mandatory repairs. We have to replace that sealed unit.
Secundus has threatened to blockade Prime.
Prime and Secundus are moving towards war this time.
Sabine's system is now cut off from regular communication with the rest of the universe.
We have a problem. Warships. Get us away from the station, Riel.
Glennis Jones, acknowledge.
Captain Vada, Glennis Jones.
Glennis Jones, this is the Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation ship Victor. You will proceed alone down the escape passage to the lock. You will operate the lock for our boarding personnel. You will obey the orders of their commanding officer. If you disobey, your ship is toast. Got that?
You're Captain Vada?
Yes.
Start back up the passage. Tell him to sit down on the deck, hands on knees.
Where's Skeldon?
He was here a second ago.
Skeldon!
Pit to Victor. Send me a medic. Live, damn it.
From Elizabeth Moon, creator of the Serrano Legacy, a compelling new sci-fi series, Vata's War. Book 1, Trading in Danger. Part 1. In Graphic Audio.
In the survivalist's world, rest is nothing more than a dying star in the black hole of war.
Paul! No good, John!
They are crashing!
Get on!
My men! I must... They're dead!
the weapon! Paul, you and Michael, get the fuselage door open and stand back! Flames!
Whatever we're doing, do it now!
Everybody, now! Follow me and jump, and God help us!
Do you like Maria?
You want to talk about her now?
It's not as if we get a lot of downtime together.
Well, she's pretty, she's smart, obviously nuts about you.
You didn't answer my question.
What are you asking me? Is it all right because of what happened to Madison and the baby?
Do you stay where the other scientist stays, Svetlana?
I have a room there, of course. But I find my apartment in the city more conducive to thought.
I would like to see it very much. Might I do that? See it?
Yes, Comrade Marshall.
Nikolai, Svetlana. Nikolai. I don't suppose you are the sort of man who would choose suicide. No, death before dishonor certainly, but not suicide in a situation such as this.
That is correct, Comrade Marshall.
And what will you say at your trial, Vasily?
Comrade Marshall?
When you are asked why you, a major of the elite corps, its commander, why you allowed this wanted war criminal to go free, along with several other war criminals, why did you?
Comrade Marshall. His son saved my life. I met Dr. Rourke. He is a man of consummate bravery. He could not be the evil person he has been painted to be. I spoke with him. I fought beside him. He perhaps...
Hero Marshal, a courageous, honorable, and always truthful Vladimir Karamazov lied? See how far you get saying such a thing at a trial.
But...
The bridge is secure, and so are the torpedo rooms. Time's on our side now.
The ship is ours!
Jerry Ahern's The Survivalist, number 18, The Struggle. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.